about Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Steve Perry, and he'll be answering your most important questions on Project Healing Waters. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're going to be broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Steve a question, just go to our homepage on askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box there to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address on the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within 48 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to the website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Steve Perry about Project Healing Waters. Captain Bob Jaspers of Flats Time Charters will introduce you to the Mosquito Lagoon, Indian River, and No Motor Zone of the Banana River on the east coast of Central Florida. Only a short drive from Orlando, you will sight fish for big redfish, spotted sea trout, and black drum, as well as a seasonal snook and tarpon. Captain Bob is a lifetime resident of the area, and it shows in his knowledge of the local fish, flora, and fauna. Call Flats Time Charters now and arrange your next memorable adventure. You can reach Captain Bob Jaspers at 321-631-4051. That's 321-631-4051. Or go to his website at flatstime.com. That's FLATSTIME.com. Before we introduce Steve, I'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to the Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. So you have two chances to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage, askaboutflyfishing.com, and look for the link under Steve's section that says click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link, fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a $25 gift certificate, courtesy of Front Range Anglers in Boulder, Colorado. Here's how you can win. You must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. The question will be about something we talked about during the show, and you must submit your answer, along with your name and location, using the text box on our homepage. So listen closely and use your best typing skills, and maybe you'll win that $25 gift certificate. Tonight our guest is Steve Perry. Steve is the program lead for the Colorado Springs chapter of Project Healing Waters Fly Fishing. He began working with Project Healing Waters by coordinating a fishing trip on Ontario Creek, Colorado in 2010. In late 2012, he began work as a trip committee planner for the Colorado Springs chapter. Having also worked as a fishing mentor, Steve has been the Colorado Springs program lead since early 2013. Steve retired from the U.S. Army in 2004 after 21 years in Special Forces. And after the military, he began working in the defense industry for companies such as L3 Communications, Lockheed Martin Scientific Research, and Scientific Research Corporation. He has spent much of his professional career working in program and project management fields. He has managed at levels from small teams up to $200 million programs. Being stationed at Fort Collins, Colorado, prior to retiring from the Army, Steve began fly fishing in 1998 and instantly found the perfect mix of relaxation and challenge. Being a disabled veteran himself, Steve has been motivated to help veterans and soldiers less fortunate than him, understanding firsthand the value of fly fishing. His involvement with Project Healing Waters was a perfect mix of his outdoor passion, professional background, and desire to help service members and veterans in need. Steve lives in Colorado Springs, Colorado, and maintains a house in Jefferson, Colorado, within casting distance of Terry Hall Creek. He's a proud father of three children. And when not fly fishing, he also enjoys big game hunting, hiking, and motorcycle riding. Steve, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Thank you, Roger. It's a real pleasure to be on with you tonight.
Well, good. It's a pleasure to have you. And it's kind of feeling a little spring in the air here in Colorado. You know,
oh, yeah.
It snowed last night, and but this afternoon is all melting, and you know, it's starting to feel a little spring-like here, so I was kind of excited today.
Yeah, this is my favorite time of year, to be honest, to get out fishing. I like the Arkansas this time of year, where the stoneflies are molting, and the blueing olives are actually starting to come off, so it's a great time of year to get out.
Yeah, and before the runoff starts, right? And,
yeah, absolutely.
With that, it's a good time of year. Yeah. Well, Steve, you've had the involvement of both being a veteran and in Project Healing Waters, and we see you guys a lot at the fly fishing shows and different events and so forth. But I'm sure many of us wonder, well, what really goes on with Project Healing Waters? So why don't you describe what Project Healing Waters Fly Fishing is and what the organization does? Kind of give us a brief background of that.
Yeah, sure. Project Healing Waters is, we are geared to help disabled veterans and injured service members with recovery from both physical and emotional injuries or conditions that they may have through a variety of different fly fishing type activities. One of the things that sets us apart from some of the other organizations that are out there to help our disabled vets and injured service members, I think, is that when somebody gets into our program, it's not really kind of a one-time event for us. We build relationships both between our participants, between the participants and volunteers that, last throughout the year. We go on multiple trips with them. We develop true friendships with them. There's a lot of camaraderie that you'll see between the vets. One of the things that you'll find is that a lot of people we have, it's difficult for them to relate to civilians sometimes, just because of the things that veterans have been through in certain instances. So when we get vets together and then mentors that are helping them, many of them are vets themselves, it gives a great opportunity to bond together and opportunity for discussions to take place that may not, veterans may not have that opportunity in their normal day-to-day life.
Right.
So we do the three main activities that we're involved with are fly fishing trips, which we do a fair number throughout the country. We do fly tying activities. We teach people how to teach either beginner fly tying or intermediate, in some cases advanced, as well as rod building. So those are the three main areas, fly fishing, fly tying, and rod building.
How did Project Healing Waters start? I mean, who started it? When did it start? How did it get going?
Yeah, there was our founder is a gentleman named Ed Nicholson, and he was visiting Walter Reed Medical Center back in 2005. And he was talking to some of these injured service members, trying to get an idea on, what he could do to help those service members out. And he discovered there was a few people that he talked to, a fair number, that were interested in fishing, and fly fishing in particular. So he started researching how to help these service members out. And in 2006, he founded Project Healing Waters out of Walter Reed. So it started out on the East Coast. Shortly after that, the program that I'm the lead for out here in Colorado Springs stood up. So that was kind of the beginning, and it's gone from, that small visit by Ed through Walter Reed to where we're now a national organization. We have programs all over the country, 48 states, matter of fact.
Oh, 48 states. Wow. So, and this is a nonprofit organization, right?
Yeah, we sure are. We are a 501c3. As a matter of fact, if anybody's interested in donations, they can certainly get a copy of the paperwork that states that, but we are a registered 501c3 with the IRS.
Is there a national office then?
Yeah, the national office is based out of Maryland. We have a small staff there of a few people who really run the whole show. It's pretty impressive, the work that they do there. We have a total of, nationally, there are currently 15 regions around the country. We're getting ready to change the structure a little bit to where there's going to be 18, but we have 160 different programs. So it's a pretty robust footprint that we have nationally.
Yeah, it's really grown quite fast for how long it's been around.
Matter of fact, if you look at kind of overall how we're organized, to pull that off, we're almost all volunteers. That headquarters staff, we have 6 paid members, but we have 2,400 volunteers throughout the country. So when a program is stood up, it's generally associated with either a Trout Unlimited, a local Trout Unlimited club, a federation of fly fishers club or a local fishing club, and that's largely where we pull the volunteers from. So, you know, just here in Colorado Springs, for example, we are associated with both the Cheyenne Mountain Trout Unlimited chapter as well as Pike's Peak Fly Fishers. And we have currently a total of about 80 volunteers locally to help out with our fly fishing trips that we do just here in Colorado. That's just for our program.
And why don't you tell us a little bit, you know, what do those volunteers do?
Well, we have several different things that they do for us. One is our particular program, and every program is organized a little bit differently, but with ours, and it's becoming more of a model that we're seeing in some of the larger programs anyways, is we're based on a committee structure. So we currently have about 25 volunteers that help run our various committees, and those are committees that help interact with veterans, with volunteers, with out at Fort Carson, some of the other military installations that we work with. We have instructors that instruct fly tying and instruct rod building, fly casting, and then we have a variety of trip planners. So that's just our committee structure right there. The majority of the volunteers that we have nationally are involved with taking our participants out on fishing trips. And when I say participants, that's a generic term that we use for both disabled vets and injured service members. So most of our volunteers that work directly with a program, that's where they fit in. Having said that, we have a large number of volunteers that are kind of outside that realm. One of the things that I do want to talk about kind of a typical trip that we might run and
sure.
How that's set up. Yeah. So when we go on a typical trip, and I'll just use our program as an example, and I'll tell you that it's fairly similar throughout the country. They have a similar mechanism that they use. So we have, you know, once the trip is planned and we've worked with the hosts, and the hosts are volunteers also, so we primarily will go out and fish on private property. And part of that is so we don't leave a big footprint on public property. We do trips on public lands, but for the most part it's on private. So in our case, we'll go to one of the local fly shops here. Angler's Covey is the one that we use in Colorado Springs, and they actually donate waders for us to use on our trips. So we'll pick those up. We'll meet our participants and our mentors at the fly shop. We'll go out to a particular destination, and then once we get there, the host will have a crew of people. They may have fishing guides that are there for us, and then we'll have either the host or local residents or restaurants will bring food out for our folks. So, and then if it's an overnight trip, there will be lodging involved. So you'll have a hotel or somebody who runs cabins or something similar to that will donate lodging for us. Mm. So it's really a community effort. You know, when we say we've got 80 volunteers here in Colorado Springs and then, you know, 2,400 nationally, that's really a misleading number because there's a lot more people involved.
Yeah, even just for the day, just to help out for the day in the local area. Now, you said overnight things. All the trips are not necessarily overnight, right? I assume there's day trips and so forth.
Yeah, that's correct. We generally will either do one-day trips where we'll go out for the day and then come back that night, or we'll do multi-day trips. And typically we'll have a travel day on, you know, the front end and the back end, then we'll do a couple days fishing in between. And typically those trips, we rely on local guides to provide their services. And one of the things that's great to see is, you know, all the trips that we run, and, you know, I can speak for the other programs that I know of in the Rocky Mountain region anyways. The guides are fantastic. They volunteer their time, whether if it's a wade trip or a float trip. And, you know, we really get the top guides in the area that we're going to. So
that's nice.
Yeah, it's fantastic to see. You know, one of the things we're very fortunate right now, Roger, in the time that we live in, where there's a lot of people out there in the United States that want to help out, you know, disabled veterans, injured service members. You know, not too long ago, we didn't live in a country that was so gracious to our disabled vets, so we're pretty fortunate right now.
Yeah. And then what you talked about mentors. Define what a mentor is for the organization. And what would you have to be, you know, what are the qualifications to be a mentor?
Yeah, our mentors are basically, what we're looking for is somebody who knows the basics of fly fishing. You don't need to be an expert. You don't need to be a guide. But if you know the basics of how to tie knots, how to do basic casting, how to set up a leader, basics about fly selection, those are the types of things we need. Now, when we go on these trips, we use a one-to-one ratio. So we have one participant with one mentor. And that mentor will basically stay with that participant from the time we arrive at the destination, will help get all the equipment ready. If that participant is brand new to fly fishing, they'll review the equipment, you know, what's a fly rod, you know, how to hook up the reel to the rod, how to adjust your drag on the reel, how it works, go through, you know, basics of fly lines, leaders, tippets. And they're there not to be strictly a guide, but to be a friend, to assist them in any way they need help, but not to be overbearing. So, for example, if you're a disabled vet on one of these trips, you know, you've been fly fishing for a couple of years, we'll let you do, you know, you'll do as much as you're comfortable with, but you'll have somebody there with you to assist you as is needed. But that mentor will be by your side throughout the day to help you if you need waiting, just to talk and, you know, be your friend and assist in whatever way is needed.
So that you don't have to have any particular expertise with medical expertise or anything like that as far as dealing with...
No, you sure don't. But, you know, one of the things we do is we have mentor guides, and we try and prepare them as best we can. Just some advice on how to deal with our disabled veterans and injured service members. One of the things we, you know, talk to them about is, you know, we're here to go fish and have a good time, and it's a fellowship type of an adventure. We don't, you know, try and pry into the participant's personal life, and if they want to share something, that's fine, but if not, that's fine too. We look at these fly fishing trips as a tool to assist in the recovery from whatever injury or illness that participant may be suffering from. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we really try and look at these events as things that help open the door to assist in recovery.
So basically a mentor just needs that basic fly fishing background, and that's really it. And otherwise, just be a friend, and that's the only real qualifications you need then.
Yeah, it is, Roger. You know, like I said, you don't need to be an expert. You know, we look for men and women both. We have female and male service members and veterans that are part of the program. As a matter of fact, with our particular program out here in Colorado Springs, the female participant side is the fastest growing portion. We started last year with just a couple females in the program, and then by the end of the year, I think we're up to about a dozen. And we actually have some specialized trip just for women. So it's a pretty exciting part of the program, and it is the fastest group that we have.
You need to teach your recruiting techniques to the rest of the industry to get more women involved. We're always trying to get women involved, and so maybe some of the techniques you're using there could be applied across the industry.
Yeah. It could be. You know, I'll tell you, every guide that I've talked to who guide women will tell you that women are the preferred clients because they learn faster. They're more open. Us guys, we're kind of stubborn sometimes. We want to do things our own way sometimes, and to our own detriment.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. You had mentioned some of the local shops and stuff in your area providing waders. Are they also providing then rods, reels, and you know, the other equipment that's needed?
You know, that really varies from program. I'll tell you that our particular program, we have our own. We have everything that the participant needs minus the waders.
Okay.
So, yeah, so that's where Angler's Covey comes into play. And then we've got some new trips we're doing this year, and we've got another shop in town. Peak Fly Shop's going to be helping us out with some other waders too. But, you know, every program's different. I know there are some programs that own their own waders. Mm. For us, logistically, that's difficult. know, because you get falls in the waders and there's repair issues and keeping enough sizes to be able to meet all the different potential people you may be having going on a trip, it's pretty difficult.
Yeah. Steve, we need to take a quick break, but stick with me here, and I'll be right back, and we'll talk more about what Project Healing Waters is doing. Women's fly fishing in Alaska is owned and operated by well-known female guide Pudge Kleinkoff. Women's fly fishing offers several lodge-based fly fishing schools for women, as well as an array of small group-guided trips for women and couples to some of Alaska's best-known waters for salmon, rainbow trout, Arctic grayling, and char. Pudge also leads saltwater fly fishing groups to Mexico each spring. Beginners are welcome and equipment is provided. Learn more about fly fishing for women at www.womensflyfishing.net. That's www.womensflyfishing.net. Or call Pudge at 907-274-7113. That's 907-274-7113. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Steve Perry about Project Healing Waters Fly Fishing. If you'd like to ask Steve a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Okay. You talked about a lot of the volunteers, and I know you've got some numbers to share with us on what that means, those volunteer hours and how that works out in dollar value. You want to share that with us?
Yeah, I sure can. You know, if you look at strictly 2013, we're tracking 130,000 volunteer hours that were given to Project Healing Waters by those 2,400 volunteers that I mentioned. If you use the IRS calculations, that's a contribution of $2.9 million in non-cash value to Project Healing Waters nationally. That's a substantial amount of contribution that we've had just through our in-house volunteers. Like I was saying earlier, that doesn't account for everybody. Colorado Springs, for example, this year we have 40 fly fishing trips planned for the year, and that's starting in the beginning of May, and we're running through, it's like the first or second week of October. If you take that and you consider that we've got about, on average, about 8 disabled vets or injured service members per trip, if you kind of work the numbers on that, that's about 700 volunteers we actually have to support our fishing trips internally this year. So when we say that $2.9 million cash value for Project Healing Waters nationally, that's what we're tracking largely through the reporting that we do, although not everything is reported. And to be honest, I don't want to report everything. You know, when we go on these trips, it's more about, you know, helping the participants, getting out, creating a good experience, and helping with the recovery. You know, to manage what we're doing, there's a fair amount of paperwork involved, but I can tell you it's pretty substantial. If you look at other, like, non-cash type donations, and here I'm talking about goods and services, you're looking at about another $461,000. Which accounts for roughly 21% of the national organization's revenue. So goods and services, give you some examples of those. Like I was saying earlier, when we go on these trips, we may have lodging that's donated to us. We can have outfitters donate their services to us. We may have restaurants that cater to our events, which we do not get charged for. We have some of our fundraising events. We'll have people who will donate guided trips, destination resorts, fly rods. It could be, you know, a bamboo rod. You know, we've got a lot of bamboo rod makers out there now, and they've been very generous to donate rods for auctions for us during fundraiser events. So it's a pretty substantial effort. And, you know, I like to think of it as we have a big national, you know, a large Project Healing Waters family or Healing Waters nation around the whole country here. And it's incredible. It's been an incredible thing to see take off. If you consider that we were just founded in 2006 and we're sitting at 160 current programs, and we're expanding literally every month. We're adding new programs around the country. It's pretty remarkable growth.
Now, how many? Go ahead.
I was just going to say there's a lot of need also.
Yeah, yeah. How many? It goes to my next question of, you know, how many service, you know, injured service members and veterans are you helping at this time?
Well, in last year we tracked 5,400 disabled veterans nationally. That's just on the disabled vet side. We don't have a real good number on the service member side. There's some privacy issues where we were not able to report a lot of data on service members. So we're not able to track that side of the house real well. And then I can tell you just from experience where I'm at here in Colorado Springs, we have, just on the military installation side, we've got Fort Carson, which, by the way, that's where I retired from, not Fort Collins. You'd mentioned Fort Collins in the opening.
Oh, okay.
Fort Carson. I had to mention that because I knew some of my buddies out here would give me a hard time.
Yeah.
So we got Fort Carson, Peterson Air Force Base, Schriever Air Force Base, and then the United States Military Air Force Academy is here. So we've got those military installations that we pull from, and at Fort Carson, they have what's called a Warrior Transition Battalion, formerly known as the WTU. Now it's called the WTB for Warrior Transition Battalion. And that's where service members that meet a certain criteria are sent to receive advanced medical care and to prepare them for discharge from the military. So they'll receive some life skills type training and preparation to get out of the Army. The Air Force has similar type programs, but, you know, here Fort Carson, because it's an Army post, that's where the bulk of our active service members come from. Now, that WTB will fluctuate year to year. We'll have some years where we'll have as few as maybe 300 people in the battalion, and then we'll go up to 700, sometimes even 1,000 personnel in there. With the wars winding down now, the numbers are decreasing. So that's in the WTB. Now, if you look at, in the case of Fort Carson, there are a number of soldiers, a rather large number of soldiers that are injured that don't meet the criteria to get into the WTB. It's very strict criteria for individuals to get in there. So if we find somebody, if somebody comes to us, if we're able to find them somehow, who has a service-connected injury or in some cases, even a non-service, where it's a serious illness they may have, then we will accept them to the program. So that's on the active side for the Colorado Springs area. Now, we have, on the veteran side, the VA is tracking 11,000 disabled vets in Colorado Springs alone.
Wow.
So that's a large number, isn't it?
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought that many. Jeez.
Yeah. And then if you look at the surrounding areas that we support, we go, for instance, Pueblo, which is an area that we are starting to garner more and more veterans to join our program is down in Pueblo. There's a large veteran population down in Pueblo. We go, we have participants all the way as far south as Westcliff, and people from Colorado won't have any idea where that is, but it's, you're getting close to New Mexico down there. And then we go up as far as up into Summit County, even up around where Breckenridge is located for, again, for non-Coloradoans, and then even a little bit north of there. So we've got a pretty large area. I would guess that the area that we cover, we're probably somewhere in the neighborhood of about 25,000 disabled vets that live in the area.
Now, so, we're talking about disabled vets of all ages, right? Is there... and many wars, unfortunately. But what is there an average age to disabled vet or injured service member that?
You know, that's a good question. We have a pretty big mix. It really runs a pretty wide spectrum. We have a large number of participants that are recently discharged or, you know, still in the service that are from the Afghanistan and Iraq era. We've got a fair number of disabled vets that were what I would call the Cold War era. You know, we had some smaller wars that were going on during that time, but if you look at the Cold War era, We've got a fair number in there. Another large or rapidly growing part of our program is we're starting to see more and more Vietnam-era veterans coming into the program, which is a great thing to see. And then we also have some veterans from Korea and even beyond that. One of the getting back to the Vietnam-era vets, one of the greater things that I experience running this program is when I go on a trip somewhere, and at the end of the trip, having one of our Vietnam-era vets come up and say that they think it was the first time that anybody's thanked them for the service to their country, it's a pretty significant thing in my mind that, you know, Vietnam was quite a while ago, and there's still a number of vets out there who don't feel as though they've been thanked for their service. And we would welcome any Vietnam-era vet that has any type of injury or illness that would like to join the program. We'll welcome you with open arms. And matter of fact, on our trips now, I make it a point at the beginning of the trip when we do our initial meet and greet to point out any Vietnam-era vets to the hosts and the guides there, because they certainly deserve our thanks.
Sure, yeah. Hal, what are other ways, or what are the ways that you reach out to the vets, service members, to let them know about what you're doing? And do you have programs that go into these areas or the bases or anything like that?
Yeah, we do. On the veteran side, what we do is we put out flyers, brochures at the different centers where we know veterans will be. Whether it's VA clinics, it can be the DAV sites, and any of the other VFW sites, any site where we think there may be veterans that could use our help, we'll put out information brochures there. We also will sit down and meet with care providers at the various clinics, primarily VA clinics, and part of it is we want to educate them a little bit on the different activities that we're involved with, some of the benefits that we have seen to the programs, whether the fly fishing or fly tying or rod building, and there may be different benefits for those three different areas. And then they help identify individuals who might benefit from our program, and then they will, maybe hand them a flyer, recommend they contact us. And then once they make the contact with us, then we'll start working it from our end.
Okay.
And I was going to say, on the service member side, it's a little bit different, but there are a variety of ways to get into the different military installations. There may be, town hall meetings or, volunteer appreciation days. There's usually a coordinator that we can work through there. One of the things that we have is we're a CFC organization, which is Combined Federal Campaign Organization. So that it's basically an organization that Department of Defense recognizes so that service members and other federal employees can make contributions, and they're recognized as a 501c3 that directly benefits. I believe you have to directly benefit military personnel or other government employees. So that helps us out also, as it enables us to have opportunities to talk before service members and try and find people that can use our help. And same thing with the VA is we'll work with the care providers there and make sure they're educated on our programs and how what we're doing might benefit the service member and their recovery.
What is, just clarify, difference between disabled veterans and injured service members? What is an injured? Disabled vets is pretty clear, but I'm not clear on injured service members.
Yeah, well, we open it up so a disabled veteran is somebody who's been discharged from the military and has received some type of a disability rating from the VA. When we say injured service member, these are individuals that have been injured while on active duty, serving their country. It can be a number of different injuries that they may have suffered from. I mean, we have individuals who run the full gamut from, people may have had amputations, they may be post-traumatic stress type patients, they can have traumatic brain injury, they can have visual impairments, hearing impairments. We have individuals who are paraplegics. Really, if you can think of any type of injury that an individual may have sustained while on serving their country, and they're still in the service, those are what we consider injured service members. And I'll, if I can add to that a little bit, if you have somebody who has a significant illness, then we would certainly look to them to include them in the program also.
So these injured service members are people that are still actively serving?
They are. They are.
Okay.
And most of them are in the process of being considered for discharge from the military. The vast majority will eventually be discharged, and sometimes it can take up to a couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I'll tell you, the military's doing a great job by ensuring that individuals, for the most part, they're doing a great job and ensure that they get the proper care and preparation before they are discharged to make sure they're ready.
Well, you know, you mentioned serious illnesses and so forth. My father was a Vietnam vet and was, I don't know what the term is, but, you know, he was qualified as a disabled vet because of what they figures was the consequences of Agent Orange and those kind of poisons and so
forth.
And so, you know, part of that was Parkinson's and cancer that he had to deal with. So is that a situation that might qualify?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. As a matter of fact, you know, one of the reasons why we've opened up to the different illnesses is because there are a lot of exposures that service members are, you know, go through, that there are some unexplained illnesses that, you know, I'm retired from the military myself, and there's a lot of us out there that have certain illnesses that, you know, are maybe not common. There's a higher percentage in the military. We don't quite understand, you know, how they come about sometimes. But Agent Orange, absolutely. Somebody with cancer patients, absolutely. Multiple sclerosis is another example. Anybody with those types of illnesses, we'd certainly welcome them to the program.
Okay. Need to take another quick break here, and then we'll be right back, and we'll find out more about Project Healing Water. So stick with us, folks. Kini's Fly Shop in Sacramento, California features classes on all aspects of fly fishing. They have an extensive inventory and fly tying department and a friendly, experienced staff whose primary goal is your complete satisfaction. Among their many services, one can book private waters or take advantage of their international travel service. Visit their extensive website at www.kini.com. That's www.kini.com, K-I-E-N-E.com. Or you can call Kini's Fly Shop at 1-800-400-0359. It's 1-800-400-0359. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Steve Perry about Project Healing Waters Fly Fishing. If you'd like to ask Steve a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Okay. Lots to talk about here, Steve. No wonder we don't get the full story when we're out at these fly shows, and it's really nice to kind of dig in here and really understand what Project Healing Waters is all about. Now, let's see. We talked about, maybe you could talk about the age. When can you kind of maybe relate a personal story of success that, you know, that you were involved with? We've talked about how, you know, we've talked about this whole program, but we really haven't talked about how it benefits people on a one-on-one basis. Maybe you can kind of share some stories with us on those personal experiences.
Yeah, that's a good point, Roger. It's great to do all this work, but without being able to put it into context a little bit to see how it actually benefits, that's really what we're all about. I'll tell you what, you know, again, we're talking about fly fishing, fly tying, and rod building. One of the things that many of the veterans will have, you know, is as you suffer these injuries, oftentimes individuals are faced with surgical procedures or something else that is going to require a prolonged recovery. During that recovery, oftentimes there's people experience isolation, feelings of loneliness, abandonment sometimes, and it can, you know, understandably sometimes lead to depression in some cases. So one of the good things here is that it helps you get out of the house, off the couch, out of bed, and, you know, getting out and being with people who are very similar and have had very similar experiences. Oftentimes, if you've had these traumatic experiences, you'll withdraw within yourself, and being around people who can really understand where you're coming from helps you kind of come out of your shell a little bit. Our activities are very low stress. They're a lot of fun. You know, you kind of learn at your own pace, and it's a great environment. We're out there just to have fun.
So is there a natural bonding that happens among the service members that and the vets? You know, I mean, I'm assuming these, you know, you take out 8 participants at a time, and they may not, any of them may not know each other, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And I'll tell you, especially on these overnight trips, you'll go out and you may have 1 or 2 people might know each other, but for the most part, it's a new group coming together. If you can imagine, you drive out for a few hours to get to wherever you're going to, maybe you're in a van or a couple vehicles, and you get out there, you have dinner, and over the course of a couple of days, and for many people, it's the first time they've had an opportunity to be around people who have very common shared experiences. Mm. And a lot of people, you think that, you know, I'm the only one who's feeling this way, or I'm the only one who's experiencing these things. But as you're around other service members who have had similar experiences, you start opening up a little bit, and it really helps out quite a bit. You know, getting back to maybe some of the things that I've personally seen or personally experienced, and I'll leave names out of this, but
sure.
There's 2 stories that I'd like to share, if we've got time. The first one is a young person who I was sitting, I've worked too, I'm not retired, so I was sitting at my office one day. It was actually on a Wednesday afternoon at about 12:30 in the afternoon. I had an email pop up from Gary Spuler, who's the Rocky Mountain Regional Coordinator. And he said, hey, there's this guy's wife who asked to get her husband involved with Project Healing Waters, and they just moved to the area. So I immediately jumped on that to try and help them out. One of the things, Roger, is the divorce rate for disabled veterans is through the roof. It's an ungodly high rate, especially with the type of injuries and illnesses that we deal with. It's extremely high. So if somebody's spouse reaches out, then I do everything I can to help them out right away, and they kind of go to the top of my priority list. So anyways, when I finally was able to take a little break at work, it was about 3:30, and I contacted this individual's wife and said, you know, hey, thank you very much for reaching out to your husband, gave her our website, said, hey, please go ahead and register your husband there. I've got your information, and we'd love to have him with the program. And, you know, we've got a few trips coming up, and, you know, as soon as the rosters come open, we'll start trying to plug your husband in. So everything was great. So that night, we're talking Wednesday night at about 8:30. The next morning, we were going off on probably our biggest high-profile trip, our biggest trip of the year. And for whatever reason, on that particular trip, we take about 20 participants out on it. It's a really big trip. And for whatever reason, all the alternates that we had, we've kind of run through for one reason or another. And at 8:30 on Wednesday night, I got a phone call that said, hey, Joe Smith is not able to go tomorrow. So I kind of went into a little momentary state of panic there. And then I instantly thought of this individual's wife who had called me, so I called her up right away. And again, this is about 8:30 at night. I said, hey, I know this is really short notice, but we've got a great trip in the morning. Can you have your son or your husband over the Angus Covey in the morning? We need him to be there at 5 o'clock in the morning, and this is what you need to pack. And she didn't even hesitate. She said, yeah, absolutely, he'll be there. So I was kind of surprised. I, you know, figured that was a lot to ask for, but they were all over it. So the next morning, we showed up at Angler's Covey. We call it the Covey here. And I met the individual's wife. I went over and talked to him, and I understood right away why we had, I'd been talking to the guy's wife. He was having some trouble communicating verbally, and he was able to get out about a half a word, and just from some of the trauma he'd experienced previously, and he wasn't able to communicate verbally. So, you know, of course, we welcomed him in the program, loaded his gear up into one of the vehicles, and, you know, assured him that he'd have a great time and everything was good. Well, we drove out to this one particular property, and we kind of take our time going out there. We stop for breakfast, then we'll stop at lunch, and then we get out to the property right about 2 o'clock. And then this particular property, Gary Borger, tries to show up, at least on this one he did, and he gives his casting demo, and he talks to the troops out there and kind of gives them an introduction. And by the way, Gary volunteers his time, so if Gary's listening, thank you very much. But anyway, so then we go and we do about 2 hours on the water, kind of an introduction. You kind of, you know, shake out the fly lines, make sure everything's good to go, equipment checks, you know, whatever we want to call it. And so that night we had dinner and we went back to the cabins and I went around and I was talking to people and I asked this individual how he was doing. And, you know, that morning he couldn't get one word out. Well, that night he got into his third word before he had to stop. So I'm thinking that's a huge success story. You know, I'm thinking, you know, you made the entire trip for me. This is real success. I couldn't have been happier. Well, the next day we went out on the water and we had a full day fishing trip. He had his guide with him. His guide happened to be Jim Buckler, who is the owner of, he's got a fly shop in Silverthorne there. I'll remember it here in a minute. But a Cutthroat Anglers in Silverthorne. Well, Jim was his guide that day. And anyways, you'd think it's just a regular fly fishing trip. Well, that night, I made it a point to go around to the cabins and talk to each of those 20 people individually to see how they were doing. Well, I went up to this individual. I said, so how did your day go? And he started talking, Roger. The words just kept flowing out of his mouth. And he had a joy in his life that I'm sure he had not had in a very long time. And he was telling me about how great his day was, how great life was. He had literally completely turned his life around in that one day of fishing on the water. And I looked down at my watch. It's been going a couple minutes. And I kind of backtracked, figured it had been about 5 minutes. And it was, I kid you not, it was about a half hour that he kept talking. And it was just a complete transformation in this young man's life.
My gosh.
Now, most of the story.
His wife must have been very surprised when he got home, huh?
Oh yeah, yeah. She was very happy. I'll talk to them every once in a while to see how he's doing, and everything's going pretty good. And you know, usually it takes a little bit longer to see results like that. But I'll tell you, I talked to Jim. Actually, I didn't know that Jim was his guide until just about 2 months ago, and Jim and I were having dinner somewhere, and he said what it was when he got that first fish on. He said, there was something about having the fish on the other end of that rod and feeling the fish and the life in the fish. And after he landed that fish in this particular area, they have rather large fish. He said that's when he was able to talk. It was just from catching that one fish. So there's some magical things about fly fishing. I don't think we completely understand it. Our national office is actually, I believe it's Cornell University, is getting ready to do a study to take a look at the benefits and how exactly it works. But all I know is that it works, and that's my fly fishing story. Do we have time for the fly tying story?
Sure. Let me take another quick break, and then let's come back, and we'll talk about that. And also, of course, we want to talk about how everybody can get involved that wants to get involved with volunteering and so forth. So I'll be right back. Royal Gorge Anglers is a full-service fly shop on the Arkansas River in Canyon City, Colorado. They provide both walk, wade, and float fishing guide service on the Arkansas, South Platte, and several high country ranches. They specialize in fly fishing education and work to assure that everyone taking a trip leaves being a better fly fisher. For the best service and the most fun in the Southern Rockies, visit the folks at Royal Gorge Anglers, the gateway to Southern Colorado. They're located conveniently on US 50, only 45 minutes from Colorado Springs. For more information, visit their website at www.royalgorgeanglers.com. That's royalgorgeanglers.com. Or you can call them at 888-994-6743. That's 888-994-6743. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Steve Perry about Project Healing Waters. If you'd like to ask Steve a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. Receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Okay, Steve. So Yeah, tell us your fly tying story.
I don't mean to occupy the show here with these stories, but I think they're good stories, and they give a good picture as to why we do this.
Exactly. It's what it's all about. And one thing, it seems as though you never know what's going to come out the other end, you know, which is kind of nice. You get some surprises and some gains. And notice, you know, you had mentioned that, you know, anywhere from just improved balance or physical strength to, you know, major breakthroughs like you had, it's pretty amazing what can happen. So, yeah, tell us about fly tying.
Yes, so we had another individual who started last year, a veteran. I won't say this person's older because this person might know who I'm talking about. But anyways, this individual was encouraged to try fly tying to help with a traumatic brain injury. So, you know, with fly tying, and rod building is much the same way, is it gives you something to focus on. It helps with motor skills, hand-eye coordination. And if you think of your brain as somewhat of a muscle that, you know, helps exercise your brain and get a, you know, it helps condition your brain. So this particular person, due to a traumatic brain injury, was having difficulty grabbing a glass of water, a soda can, a bottle of water, was not able to really with one hand hold an object like that. So as you can imagine, that's, you know, it's got some impacts to your life in general, not being able to do that. So this person was encouraged by a friend to try fly tying. And so the first class was a beginner fly tying class. And if you can kind of picture somebody who can't hold a soda, after the very first day of tying flies, and one of the things that we'll do is we'll modify techniques. Fly tying is very much, it's the same thing as fly fishing. We do one instructor to one participant. So you have your personal instructor there with you. And if you need help to modify your technique a little bit, then that person will help you out with that. So this person started almost instantly starting to see the benefits of fly tying and how it helped with motor skills and hand-eye coordination. Well, this particular block of classes, it was 7 weeks long, one night a week for 2 hours, and you learned one fly each week. Now, we've modified that a little bit since then, but that's the normal routine. So you learn how to tie the fly 1 week. You're expected to tie 10 of those flies over the course of that week and then bring them in to show your instructor the next week, and you can kind of talk about how you've been doing and any problems you might have or different areas that, you know, you thought you did real well, and just get different pointers. So at the end, the expectation is that you should have, now the last week is not we have a professional fly tier that will come in and do a demo, so it's really, you end up tying about 60 flies. Well, this person saw so much benefit to it that they started spending their entire day working on tying flies. And this person had tied 250 flies at the end of 7 weeks. And then when you consider that this person was not able to hold a soda can at the beginning, to be able to tie that many flies was a remarkable improvement. Well, this person saw the benefit, and there was an intermediate class that was coming up right afterwards. So they jumped right into the intermediate class. Well, there's the same deal there where you're supposed to bring 10 flies in each week. And, oh, by the way, at the end of each of these 7-week classes, there's an award given to the top fly tier. Our particular program, we give a Orvis rod and reel to the person. And so the second time around, this person decided, well, I'm not going to show everything that I'm doing, I'm going to hold back. So this person brought in 10 flies each week. It was a 7-week program. Well, the last night, this person had tied 1,000 flies during the 7-week period. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of flies.
Yeah.
And these are intermediate flies, so they're a little bit more difficult. And, of course, this person won the fly tier, you know, the class for both the beginner and the intermediate class, so they ended up with 2 rods and reels. But kind of the neat thing about it was we were on a fishing trip one day, and there was a fly shop owner that was there with us, and I asked this person to come over and show the flies to the shop owner, and the quality of the flies was so good that this fly shop owner hired this person on the spot to become a commercial fly tire for him.
Very good. Very cool.
Yeah. So in a matter of a few months, you went from somebody who couldn't hold a soda can to a commercial fly tire.
Yeah, so and having a job as well. Yeah, yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Terrific story. Well, tell us then how people can become involved in the different ways that, and, you know, you've kind of talked about the different facets already, but let's get specific on people want to help. I know Bob in Georgia and Jeff Bowen in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and Treg Owens in Idaho have all asked, you know, what how can I get involved and what can I do?
That's a great question. And I'll tell you, whether if you're a disabled vet, injured service member, or a volunteer, you want to become a volunteer, the best way to get involved is to contact either our national office or to find the program nearest where you live. If you go to our national website, which is projecthealingwaters.org, again, that's projecthealingwaters.org, you'll find information for contacts for all the different regions around our country. Matter of fact, if you go to that website, you look at the top, there's a tab for programs, and it's broken down by region, and there's a contact POC there, depending on what region of the country you're living in, and you can send them an email, or you can send an email directly to the national office, and their email is admin@projecthealingwaters.org, and that will go to our national staff out in Maryland. And they will promptly answer any of your questions and get you in contact with the right folks. Now, if you happen to be out in the Colorado Springs area, we have our own website. That website is PHWFF, and that's for Project Healing Waters Fly Fishing. So it's PHWFFColoradoSprings.org. And same thing there, whether if you're a participant or volunteer. For that matter, if you're a host, if you're somebody who has some property that you'd like to interact with our program, you can go to that website as well. So if you want to make donations, we've got a tab there. If you want to make a donation specifically to the Colorado Springs program, you can go there, and it has instructions on how to make that happen. But we also have email addresses for different committee members, including myself, on there. So that's really, if you're interested in getting involved, just go to those websites and we'll would love to have you involved.
Well, I actually had a couple specific questions on the internet. Treg Owings in Idaho, Moscow. He said, "I'd like to take someone out sometime. I have a nice raft and can row. Is there a way to become involved? Do you do one-on-one kinds of things like that, or would Treg be better off contacting the office and being involved in are they always group affairs or?"
You know what? What I would suggest to Treg is to work through that process I was just describing. Go to the national website and, you know, contact the regional coordinator for where. And this goes for everybody wherever you happen to live.
Right.
Every program is run a little bit differently. I'll tell you that ours, we have what we call a Take a Vet Fishing program, and we have a pretty decent number of individuals that will take vets out if they want to go fishing. So, you know, if, you know, a particular veteran wants to go out, you know, they've heard, you know, tomorrow on the Arkansas River it's going to be cloudy and about 70 degrees, so we're going to have some blue-winged gulls going off. He's heard about that, wants to go out tomorrow, so he can conduct it. He can contact the veteran committee membership, and then they will set up a mentor to take him out tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So we do one-on-one. Each program's a little bit differently, but it's best to contract the program nearest to you and figure out how to make that happen.
Okay, likewise, we have Rod in Portland, Oregon. He wrote in and said, he really enjoys tying flies, but will never fish all the flies he ties. How would I go about donating the flies and materials? So he would go through the same thing, trying to find the local chapter and see if he can donate flies to that chapter?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, unless he'd like to fill my fly box.
Okay.
No.
Come on now.
Yeah, but go through the same process. Contact the local program. particularly with flies or, you know, individuals trying to help out, it is best to, you know, work through the regional coordinator to find the program that's local to where you're at. And I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, would they also, obviously we always, you know, need flies, all right? That's an item that gets used up, so to speak. But what about other equipment? You know, I mean, extra rods, waders, those kind of things. Do the programs take those kind of things in as well?
Absolutely. And we absolutely do. And I'll tell you, in the case of our program, we certainly do. We've had people donate waders. And because we get our waders drawn from a local fly shop, the Covey there, what we'll do when people donate waders is we'll find a veteran who is in need of waders, and we will make sure that veteran gets that equipment personally, so then it becomes, you know, something that they own and it's something right. that they need.
Yeah. I'm assuming some of the participants are capable to go out on their own and or, you know, transport themselves to sites themselves where the others are not and probably need more help. But so
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to mention is something we haven't really hit on yet is that when our participants go out on these trips, we provide everything for them. They just need to get to the meeting location. We provide food. We provide all the equipment. We provide lodging, guides. There is absolutely no cost to any of the participants for what we're doing. So I think that's something important for people to understand is that if you want to get involved with the program, it's not going to cost you anything other than to show up wherever we're meeting at that morning.
Right. I know what the other question I meant to ask you is, do the participants come back for multiple trips? Do you have repeat participation? Is that common?
Yeah, it's very common. We kind of getting back to the thing I said up front is that when we go on a trip, it's not a one-time event. We want people to come back. You know, once somebody gets that fly fishing bug, like probably most of the people on this podcast have, you know, you're going to want to come back for more, and then we invite them back. I'll tell you, there is a little bit of a management side to it as to, you know, if you have 8 slots going on a trip and there's 30 people that want to go, then, you know, we kind of have to decide who's going to go on the trip, and that varies how that happens. But, yeah, absolutely, we get more people that are involved. If there's one other thing I can mention, Roger, it's, you know, there was a question related to a couple of these folks are in areas where there may not be an existing program.
Oh, yeah.
So, if somebody lives in an area where there's not an existing program and you are interested in having a program in your area, I would encourage you to email that email address I gave at the national office. It's admin@projecthealingwaters.org, and communicate with the national staff there, and they can assist you with getting a program stood up in your area.
Great, yeah, because yeah. I'm sure there's room for expansion, huh? Always.
Yeah, there sure is. Yeah. I mean, if there's veterans out there that want help, we want to help them. We want to reach out and provide assistance to people who need help.
Yes, we got one more thing to go over, and Michael Berta in Madison, Wisconsin, wrote in, and he says, "I'm the project lead at Madison, Wisconsin VA. How do you get the word out to your program?" Of your program to vets in your area. Give us some specific hints on fundraising for your program. Thanks kindly, and keep up the good work. So, I'm not clear on whether he's a project lead at the VA office or project lead at Healing
in
Waters.
Madison.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think what it is, Roger, is each of our programs are associated with a fishing organization in that area, whether it's Trout Unlimited, Fly Fishing Organization, or Federation of Fly Fishers, as well as typically some type of a military installation or VA installation. So I believe he is the program lead in Madison, Wisconsin, and he works directly with the VA office there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I've already hit a little bit on how to outreach to vets. We work directly with community clinics, particularly the care providers. Getting to his fundraising question, I'll tell you, all I can tell you is how we do it here. We have the biggest fundraising event that we do in Colorado Springs for our program at large is most people have probably heard of the Fly Fishing Film Tour, or F3T. When it comes to Colorado Springs, Anglers Covey and Royal Gorge Anglers, which I think Royal Gorge Anglers is a sponsor of yours.
Right.
They're down in Canyon City.
Yes.
They partner up and they run the F3T for Colorado Springs. And, you know, it's a great event if anybody's, you know, had a chance to go there. It's just some great, fantastic short films on fly fishing and kind of runs the gamut. One of the things we do there is that they run the event in Colorado Springs as a fundraiser for Project Healing Waters. You know, it benefits them, I think, from a variety of reasons. I mean, I don't want to speak for them, but it benefits them. But more importantly is that it is probably our biggest single fundraising event of the year. And what we do is, you know, we have ticket revenues for people buying tickets to come in. We run raffles for items that range, some of the items are up to $1,000. We have special raffles for certain items over $1,000 where you may buy raffle tickets for, say, you know, $50 a pop for, you know, if you got a $2,000 bamboo rod, you know, you may sell, you know, I don't know how many tickets for it, but you'll raise money that way. And then we have a live auction for guided trips. So the way it's run there, and again, Anglers Covey and Royal Gorge Anglers runs it for us, but there'll be an hour of film, an intermission where we do a lot of this, the raffles and auctions, and then a film at the end. We do that. We also invite donors out to some of our higher-end fishing trips to take a look at how we're doing things, and then oftentimes they'll go ahead and donate money at that time. The national office, the vast majority of donations come into our national office, and the national office distributes that down to the local programs to help with the annual expenses. So those are the primary things we do. Roger, you mentioned a lot of the trade shows, the fly fishing show we do in Denver. There's the ISC shows and similar type events. We'll set up booths there. To be honest, we don't really make a whole lot of money at those events. The main thing we try and do there is identify veterans who could use some help and maybe some volunteers that want to help out and hosts. Right. That's the main thing we do there. But, you know, one of the things I wanted to mention to Michael is that I'm a member of what's called a field advisory committee that the CEO has stood up, and it's a small group of program leads and regional coordinators, and we advise the CEO on a variety of topics, and one of the things that are coming up is we're going to take best practices for fundraising, and we'll get that down to you, Michael, and it'll go out to all the program leads around the country to help kind of learn what we're all doing that works best.
Yeah, share the knowledge. Yeah. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Well, good. Well, we're out of time, but I think we've covered most of the ground. Steve, thanks so much for sharing with us. Stick with me here, Steve, for a few more minutes because we're going to do some giveaways here and want you to be involved with that. And folks, we're going to be giving away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to Fly Fishing and Tying Journal, and also that $25 gift certificate courtesy of Front Range Anglers in Boulder, Colorado. So stick with me here just a couple more minutes. We'll give those things away, and we'll call it a night. A mining company called Pac Rim Coal is planning a massive strip mine near Anchorage, Alaska. The Chewitna Coal Project will be the first project in Alaska history to mine directly through salmon habitat, the Chewitna River drainage. 11 miles of it. Critical commercial, sport, and subsistence fishing economies will be permanently destroyed. Pac Rim says it can rebuild the salmon stream, but scientific experts have found no example where successful restoration has occurred after strip mining. Chewitna coal will be shipped to Asia, leaving Alaska with nothing but devastated habitat and ruined salmon runs. It's time to stop the Chewitna coal strip mine. If you want more information about how you can help, go visit inletkeeper.org, inletkeeper.org. Just a quick reminder to everyone, before you leave the website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find a link on our homepage in the section under tonight's show that says, what did you think of this show? Just click on the link and leave your comments. We'd really appreciate it. Now it's time to give away our prizes. The winners of our drawings are randomly selected from our show's registration database. And if you didn't register for tonight's show, it's too late now, but make sure you do so for the next show so that you don't miss out on a lot of these great prizes we have to give away. If you are lucky, winner will contact you after the show and provide you with information on how to receive your prize. So we'll give away that one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers. If you want to find out more about the Federation, go to fedflyfishers.org, fedflyfishers.org. And as Steve mentioned several times tonight, that they are involved with Project Healing Waters as kind of a partner with the project. So keep that in mind, too, as you visit their site. And be sure to become a member if you don't win tonight. So let's see. Let me do a quick computer selection here and see who we come up with. And we have Dan Hucko in New York. Dan Hucko. So, Dan, congratulations. You just got yourself a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers, so I know you'll enjoy it. Okay, now we're going to give away a one-year subscription to the Fly Fishing and Tying Journal, which you can learn more about at AmatoBooks.com. Amato is the publisher of many fine books and periodicals, and I'm sure you'll enjoy this as well. Now, let me just try to generate a winner here, and I got Victor Hahn in Colorado. Victor Hahn in Colorado. So congratulations, Victor. I know you'll enjoy the subscription. And, folks, if you want to find out more about a lot of great books on fly fishing, go out to AmatoBooks.com, and you'll find all kinds of books and publications there that you can enjoy. All right. Now, let's look at doing a contest here for $25 gift certificate to Front Range Anglers in Boulder, Colorado. And you can redeem this online or in person, either way. So those of you that are not in Colorado can enjoy this prize as well. So we always ask a question of our audience, and those live on the show can win this. And this is a little tougher one tonight, but let me try this one on, see if we get an answer. And if we don't, I'll give you an option. You can give me one of two numbers here. Either tell me how many disabled veterans Project Healing Waters worked with in 2013, or tell me how many volunteers there are approximately nationally. Give me one of those two numbers, and you'll get yourself a $25 gift certificate. So, Steve, I'm waiting. And 700 is my first answer. I don't think that's the right answer to either question. Right, Steve?
Yeah, I think they pulled that from our local program. What we're looking for is a national.
National numbers here. Yeah. Okay, here. I've got 2,400 vets, 1,600 volunteers. Close.
Yeah, that's close.
You got one of the numbers right, but it doesn't have to be, it's not associated with the right pictures. 130,000. No, that's not what I'm looking for. 160,000. 1,500 volunteers. Steve, I'm not seeing it here.
We give a hint.
This might have, here, I think I got one finally. 2,400 volunteers.
That's it.
Joyce Deming in Golden, Colorado. You just got yourself a $25 gift certificate, and you only have to drive about 20 minutes to redeem it over to Boulder. So how convenient. So, Joyce, send me, I've got your email address here. Actually, that's all I need. And I will pass that over to Front Range, and they will send you a gift certificate directly from there. So congratulations, and thanks for paying attention. We want to support all those volunteers, and maybe you're one already, or maybe you would like to be one, and I'm certain everybody would love to have you on. So that's great. That was tougher than I thought it was going to be. Well, anyway, Steve, thanks so much for being on the show with us tonight. It was a lot of fun talking to you and learning more about Project Healing Waters, and I'm sure everybody also gained a whole lot of information on how they can be involved and stuff, and that's great.
Yep. Thank you, Roger. It's been a real honor to be on your show, and it's really an honor to help out our vets around the country, and maybe we'll go fishing sometime.
Sure, sir. Sounds good. Our next broadcast is going to be on March 19th, 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And guess what? I don't know what the show's going to be about. So we had a little last-minute cancellation on the booking. So I will fill that slot, but keep an eye on the website. And, of course, we'll send out announcements for you to let you know what's happening with that. We'd like to thank the Federation of Fly Fishers, Amato Books, Flats Time Charters, Women's Fly Fishing in Alaska, Royal Gorge Anglers, and Kinney's Fly Shop for sponsoring our show tonight. If you think your company would benefit from sponsoring one of our shows, give us a call at 1-800-985-1673, extension 8. That's 1-800-985-1673, extension 8. We'll be happy to explain the options available to you. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements, so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.